everybody, it's me, Roscoe, and welcome to another instalment of the Kings of Anglia Itchestown podcast. And it's me again in the hot seat replacing Stu, but do not worry, Stu is here. We need him, though, in the big dog chair to look back at another dramatic night at Portman Road as Town made it 6 wins in a row, the third time in the club's history. And what a night at Portman Road, ladies and gentlemen. Never a dull moment at this football club at the moment. And I'm joined by AJ and Stuart Watson as we look back at that game. Stu, come in, my friend. You did a fantastic job in the host chair. But for this game, we needed you in the pundit chair. And have you just about recovered from Tuesday night?
Yeah, I think so. The big dog slash pundit chair is just a standard office chair that my wife actually found at the side of the road. Someone had put it out for... she likes to find free things that people have been outside. Normally, it's a bunch of junk. But this one was a good find. Solid office chair. So that's the big dog chair. It's a freebie.
Love it, love it. You cleaned it beforehand, obviously, before you sat on it.
Yeah. Give it a little wipe down. All good.
Love it, love it. I'm actually just sitting on my bed. This is where the magic happens and all that sort of stuff. We'll move on quickly now. AJ, my friend, good to see you. Are you sitting on a chair as well?
No, I'm just standing. Yeah, I'm sitting on a chair. I'm sitting on a dining chair at the dining table because this is the best place for internet in my house, or so it would seem. So, yeah, I like the introduction there. Like, we have got Stu here. He's not hosting, but he is here. Oh, and Alex as well. Yeah. Don't forget him. He's here.
I am here
as well. Not. I don't know if we can quite call this a big dog chair, but yeah, a dining chair, if nothing else.
I like it. Stu, I saw you when I was looking, when I did my intro, I was looking at you in particular, because when I said instalment, I think you were impressed. I just saw you beam up like, ooh, he said a very different word to normal. Normally I say episode or edition.
I'll be completely honest, that didn't register with me at all until you've just said it. But well done you on saying instalment.
Yeah, new word for me. Word of the day for Roscoe. Another instalment of the Kings of Anglia podcast. Of course, sponsored by Manscaped. And we've got a lot to get through, ladies and gentlemen. So sit back and relax. If you're driving, don't do that. Just, you know, enjoy your driving wherever you're going. If you want to run, enjoy that as well. Boys, where do you want to start? Because there's a lot to talk about. I want to bring up actually a little story pre-match. Waiting for the manager and the players to come out. And out of nowhere, Liam Manning arrived. And he sort of said hello to all the photographers. He's very, very, you know, polite young man. He's young enough. I think he's probably similar age to used to. But I then did something bad. And he told me off.
Days.
Yeah, all in the 30s. Yeah, pretty much. This story is a quick one, really. I kicked his water bottle and he went, "Oi, what are you doing?" In a jest. He was joking, but he went, "Oh." So, yeah, there's a nice little start to the game. And I sort of like patted him. I went, sorry, mate. And I went, "Oh, maybe should I touch the manager? I don't know." I thought maybe I'm being too friendly here. I sort of like touched his shoulder. That was the start of the game for me. But you boys had a bit of a Wi-Fi issue at Portman Road.
Hang on. Why did you kick his water bottle as in give it a proper boot?
I was like sort of moving. There's another photographer who was like doing like a picture, like down low, doing like a download picture. And so I moved like so he can get it. And I think I just didn't know the bottle was there. So I kicked it like, you know, just by accident. And like I just hear Liam Manning go, "Oi!" in a jest, again, a joking way.
Would have been a really nice welcome to Portman Road, Liam Manning. Welcome back. Absolutely launch his water bottle like out of the stadium.
Yeah.
As you walk past. Yeah, that would maybe not have gone down too well.
No, but as I said, I've been very friendly. I don't know why. I just sort of touched him and said, "Oh, sorry, mate. Sorry, Liam. Sorry, Liam." I said Liam as well. I didn't go, "Mate." I went, "Oh, sorry, Liam. Sorry, Liam. Oh, sorry." But yeah.
I want a definitive list of managers that you would have felt comfortable doing that to and not doing that to. I reckon there's a... I'm going to get a list of championship managers.
Yeah. Who would...
All right. And I'm going to chuck a few at you.
Yeah, maybe Liam Manning, I felt, because of the Ipswich Town connections, obviously Chris Hogg, who was also at Town as well. I sort of, he sort of said hello to me because he recognised me from.
I feel like I'm interested here. I want to kick this one off, and then Stu can go. Russell Martin.
I think he's. I know he's the Norwich connection, but I think he'll be okay. But I don't know if I would go.
Oh, he feels like a kind of a blokey bloke, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I think
but also,
so.
Also, I don't know.
Obviously, because well that Norwich connection, I'll go. I'm not saying sorry to you, but I'm
I'll kick it harder next time.
Yeah. Okay, come on, Stu. Chuck some names.
Michael Carrick.
Yeah, I don't know. I think because he's big. He's a big player, isn't he? Back in the day, I think. I think I wouldn't. I'll say sorry. Obviously, I'll say sorry to anybody. Because I'm a polite. Sorry, Mike.
No touching, but you will call him Mike. Which I've never heard Michael Carrick referred to as a Mike before. He's definitely not a Mike, but that's fine.
Okay. So maybe I would go. So yeah, maybe. Or maybe like I'll shake his hand, maybe. But yeah. Any others?
Any more? I'm trying to think. There's no real kind of Nigel Pearson characters, is there?
Really any kind of
there's a lot of young managers these days, isn't there? It's just like was like, yeah, Ian Foster at Plymouth. Like, if that happened at Plymouth, maybe because at Portman Road, I was more comfortable at Portman Road. That's where I normally stand anyway. Before every game, I normally go there, get the sort of the players coming out, managers come in as well. You always get that manager shot.
What if it was someone that you didn't really know? So you've got like Huddersfield just appointed a new manager, Brighton Wright, something like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So new manager that's come in there. Scary name, scary kind of probably. I don't know if he's German or Austrian, but something like that might be quite intimidating. What would your approach be then?
Well, sorry,
run.
Yeah, but I don't know how many like managers has a water bottle like there. I think it had it like it had to be in a certain spot, and like as I said, I kicked it, and I picked out for him and I put it there for him, but he was like. He wasn't happy that it was over. He had to be like standing there. So yeah, but that was a little story pre-match. I think we had talked longer than I thought about this, but a little insight pre-match for me. But as I said, boys, you had some Wi-Fi issues. Should we just quickly get through that before we get into the game? Because that's not an ideal thing. Obviously, it didn't mind for the first half because nothing really happened. But what was going on?
Well, yeah, I mean, you say it didn't matter for the first half. I wouldn't necessarily say that would quite count because we have live blogs to run. We have things to update, all these kinds of things. You can have a half where almost nothing happens, but you still have to try and get like your updates through and stuff like that. So when you get up to the press box and it was kind of around 20 minutes before kickoff, I think that we got a nudge from, I believe it was one of the Bristol City writers, is the Wi-Fi down? And Stu looked at me and was like, no, I don't think so. And we had a look down a few seconds later, and it then dawned on us there were all sorts of problems. So I think it tried to be fixed. We had that bit and didn't really work. So the first half was us scrambling to try and get on and off the internet, off the Wi-Fi, trying to set up hotspots. I had things like my phone would suddenly kind of spring into life, but my laptop wouldn't. Stu was just cut off for 45 minutes. It kind of came in and out. The second half was a bit better. We moved to another part of the press box to try and get better Wi-Fi. I think Stu, after that point, had kind of managed to get everything together. He was sat a bit behind me after a pretty much totally blank first half. So it was good. I'd rather have it be the first half than the second half. We'll get on to second half busier. The concern from my end, obviously, we're filing reports to deadlines. We touched on deadlines in the mailbag episode, but I think ours was around 10 o'clock and trying to get everything sorted with an 89th minute winner. And the big issue that I had, having kind of been trying to play catch up after missing a lot of the first half, trying to also do the internet and trying to do the writing and actually watch the game, those three things are hard to balance. And then when Leif Davis scored the winner, as we'll get on to, the internet went out again, and it went out until full time. And the panic on my face, I think, because I turned around to Stu couldn't really hear me. I think I just turned around. I went like this. I didn't really know what it meant at that point.
Did I?
No. I thought it made, because I was pointing at the laptop and going like this. I don't know if it kind of got through or not, but I then spent the last kind of, yeah, few seconds of normal time going into stoppage time in absolute meltdown, trying to get all that sorted before it kind of just about sprung back into life again. Just as the whistle went and I was trying to get the photos up. Not one of my favourite games, I'm going to be honest. I think Stu and I are both in agreement that it was one of the hardest we've covered. I mean, a fantastic game, as we'll get on to, but a really, really difficult one to try and get everything done on time, let's put it that way.
Yeah, peep behind a curtain of what the boys have to deal with. I just use my hotspot for every game now. I just don't bother. I don't rely on the club's internet or anything.
Our hotspots were just not really working. So mine didn't show up for ages, and then when it didn't work. Stu's didn't really work. So it was just a total meltdown for most of the game. So it was fun trying to, like, sort it all out, looking down at the screens, looking up, oh, he's had a shot. Oh, what was it? Oh, it was his. Oh, and then you're trying to piece it together. Sometimes you're looking at other people who've got streams on as well, so you have to go watch that back as well, trying to piece it together. Tricky. Tricky when you're trying to balance all of it. Usually a little bit easier when, you have functioning internet, but have a last gasp winner, hard to juggle.
Yeah, well, boys, well, let's start talking about the game, as we've done a good 10-minute chat on various different things there. Stu, do you want to kick off? What? Another dramatic night at Portland Road, under the lights as well. Yeah, kick it off, my friend.
Yeah, that final 10, 15 minutes was just breathless, wasn't it? What can we say about the drama that we're seeing at Portman Road week in, week out? I wrote in the piece yesterday that I do, sort of looking back on the game, it's kind of reminding us really how far we've come from the kind of the end of days of Mick McCarthy, when so many of those matches I've kind of joked have kind of been erased from my memory or all kind of blur into one of a mishmash of nil-nils and 1-0s and 1-1s, which I think I dubbed binary boredom at that stage, because if you wrote them out in a line, there was just a series of zeros and ones. And now if you look at it, it's fours, threes, twos sometimes is it drops down to. But there's no more exciting place in the land to come and watch football week in, week out, I think, bar none, than Portman Road, because it's goals galore, it's late drama, it's Ipswich more often than not coming out on the right side of that as well. It's one of those where I think everyone would have left the ground just kind of shaking their head with a smile, thinking it's happened again. And the more it happens, the more this kind of belief grows, I think, within the players, within everyone associated with Ipswich Town, that this could happen. You know, something special is happening. You start to believe that if this keeps happening, if the comebacks keep happening, if the substitutes keep making an impact, it's just, yeah, we're struggling for words on this at the moment, aren't we? What a special season. 10 games to go now. That's come by so quick.
Yeah, crazy to think that. This team never gives up, AJ. Opening thoughts on that game. Had everything. Of course, the first half, which we'll get onto shortly. But, comeback kings once again.
Yeah, I mean, as I said on the post-match bit we did after the game, I missed the Rotherham chaos. And I feel like this is the football gods giving me a little bit of a taste of what I missed. Obviously, maybe not quite the same levels of drama, but felt like it was up there. And as Stu says, I mean, you look at this winning run, 4 goals scored against Millwall, 2 away at Swansea, 4 at home to Rotherham, 3 home to Birmingham, 2 away at Plymouth, 3 at home to Bristol City. And again, you're now seeing, I think, at least in terms of results, the early season Ipswich, because it's exactly the same kind of thing that we were seeing in September, October, November. And it's what got them to second in the table. It's what got them where they were and flying and into the kind of promotion picture, was the fact that at home, they'll cut teams to ribbons. Yeah, they'll concede. It's fine. They'll score more. Well, at least at the moment, they're scoring more than they concede. And that's kind of an accepted part of how Ipswich Town play. And the flip side of that is they tend to, at least at the moment, go on the road, and it's kind of these professional wins that we've spoken about quite a bit. It'll be ones, it'll be twos, they'll be keeping clean sheets. Not easy to go to Plymouth and keep a clean sheet, stuff like that. So it's just a bizarre, another night at Portman Road, which is just crazy to think about, that you've got a league in terms of, you look at all the big teams, Leeds, Leicester, West Brom, even Norwich can score for fun at home. All these kind of teams, 47 goals at Portman Road this season, 18 games. Next behind that is Southampton with 41, six more goals than anyone else in the league in terms of home record. Wow. What more can you say?
Yeah, I think we're running out of words. I'm sure you guys are running out of different words to, you know, describe this season as a whole in your pieces. And yeah, even fans now are like, what else can I say about this team? It's just incredible. And yeah, shall we start talking about the first half then, Stu? Really, it was a frustrating first hour, really, of this game. Obviously, there's two changes from the Plymouth win. Massimo Luongo is back in, coming in for Travis. And Marcus Harness was coming in as well, which was good to see. I think that was a potential one anyway. But thoughts on that? And yeah, that first half as a whole.
Yeah, I think they were two changes that we and most people called going into this one. The only other question mark was whether Axel would keep his place at right back, and he did. Kieran McKenna had warned pre-match that don't read too much into the fact that Bristol City had come into it off the back of three straight defeats to teams, okay, in the lower reaches of the table, but starting to improve in the likes of QPR, Sheffield Wednesday are both really picking up, Cardiff as well. He was more keen to shine a light on the fact that they'd knocked West Ham out of the FA Cup, that they'd taken Nottingham Forest all the way over two games in the FA Cup, that they'd ended Southampton's 25-game club record unbeaten run, gone to Middlesbrough and won. So they're a team that excel again when they're the kind of underdogs, basically. When the other team is the favourite and a team that likes to have lots of the ball, they're good at being organised and hitting you on the counter-attack. And that's exactly what we saw in that first hour. It was frustrating. They sat in modern parlance, called a mid-block. It wasn't a kind of high press, but they just, I think Liam Manning is a talented young coach, as I said, in the build-up. And I think he kind of knew the patterns of play that Ipswich are so well known for, and stopped Ipswich getting any kind of rhythm, really. Weren't able to kind of, all the passing lanes were kind of blocked off. And yeah, it was a bit of a frustrating watch. It was stop start as well. There was a couple of lengthy injury stoppages that didn't help. And then when Ipswich did eventually get into some decent little positions, just that final little bit of execution wasn't there. I think the tone was kind of set in the second minute when Sam Morsy kind of hit a deep free kick over everyone behind. There was a moment where Connor Chaplin got in a good position down the right and just chipped his cross into the keeper's hands. So yeah, it was a bit of a sort of a bits and pieces first half, and that kind of bled into the start of the second half. And you knew that it was going to be another game where Ipswich were going to have to go deep, and the subs were going to have to make a difference.
Yeah, and we'll get onto that shortly. But yeah, AJ, I will admit, when it was half time, I went up for a hot chocolate. Of course, we had the Fabley Awardley and Fraser Clark head to head, and yeah, I don't think Clark will be allowed back at Portman Road for what he did, wearing the Norwich shirt on that head-to-head. But I did think it was going to be one of those, like, could this be another goalless draw? Obviously, we had not had many at Portman Road. Of course, we had the QPR game at the end of 2023. But at one stage, I thought, oh, do you know what? Bristol City may be defending their lives, and we're just not creating those chances. But Bristol City do, of course, take the lead. But yeah, how were you? Where were you at when it was at 0-0 and not much happening?
Yeah, same kind of thing. But I think that there's always that belief that Town, especially with the subs, are going to change things. That was the biggest thing. Obviously, in the end, it kind of ended up playing out as almost a reverse of what we've seen in a lot of games, which is, pardon me, the first half, a lot of the time you just see Town go 2, 3, 4 goals, whatever. And then the second half, they can just sit off it and play out a goalless second half, essentially, after the restart. And this was the reverse of that. I don't think we've often seen five goals, probably the first time this season, I'd assume that we've seen five goals in the second half at Portman Road, or in any Town game. We need to have a look at that. But that was, yeah, how it ended up playing out. And in terms of where I was, yeah, I think there was kind of that belief that they would have the space to kind of exploit, because Bristol City would tire more than anything. And this mid-block was really nullifying the gaps that Town like to play through. So huge credit to Liam Manning for that, because it's not an easy thing to do, especially coming away from home. It's really, really difficult. But when you've played all these kind of games that had quite a difficult run coming into it, obviously, Kieran McKenna wanted to point away from that. But it does mean that confidence can be low, and you also just feel a little bit fatigued and a little bit drained, maybe coming into it thinking as well, where's their season heading? Is it going to be kind of fizzling out in terms of getting into the top six? All those things, I think, kind of play into it. And it just felt like if Town could start to turn the screw, then, I don't know, floodgates open, but the gaps would just start to get wider and wider, and it would become a fairly comfortable win. Obviously, not exactly how it played out in the end. And I just think that, to their credit, Bristol City are a really, really resilient side. So for them to go and take the lead, for them to do it twice, obviously, it shows that there's quite a lot about them. I think Liam Manning will get it under control. And that first period up until around the hour mark, even when they took the lead and just before being pegged back again, showed what he can get out of this side. And also shows maybe where Town, again, look, amazing form. We'll get on to all the superlatives we can talk about in terms of the performance, in terms of the result, in terms of the run. But definitely areas where they can improve, as Kieran McKenna said after the game, areas that they'll want to look at in terms of that first kind of hour of the game.
Yeah, and Stu, 1-0 down, and then here comes the subs. Quadruple substitutions. That was very interesting. Were you happy that I said that right, AJ?
Yeah, sorry. I think after you said installment earlier, I thought that quadruple would be one of those that might prove a little bit tricky. I hope it doesn't come across the wrong way, but I remember you struggling with Morgan Whittaker the other day. Yeah. So I was thinking, fair play for getting quadruple.
Yeah, quadruple subs do. We'll play that clip in a minute. Kieran McKenna sort of saying that was planned, obviously, because a long trip with Plymouth. But yeah, obviously that was a big help for Town, those four changes, quadruple changes.
Yeah. Start of the second half had kind of continued in the same vein, really. A little bit of a worrying moment when Kiefer Moore seemed to roll his ankle and moved a little gingerly on that for a spell afterwards and managed to run that off. Then Luke Wolfenden got sort of dispossessed running out from the back. And then they go and score on the counter-attack. We talked a lot in the build-up to this about them being good at set pieces and them being good on the counter-attack. It was a counter-attack goal. Amari Hutchinson, I don't think it's a foul. I think he just gets muscled off the ball. And in the final third, one quick pass, got Mometi down the left-hand side. He sort of dances his way, good feet, to sort of trick his way inside Axel Twanzebe and takes a little nick off of Wolfenden's trailing heel. But it's not, I don't think it's a huge deflection that wrongfoots the goalkeeper or anything like that. And at that stage, it sort of brings back memories of maybe some of the games in League One where Ipswich struggled against this sort of team that were organised, competitive, difficult to break down, had a bit of a counter threat. If you think back to some of the points dropped at home against the likes of Lincoln and Fleetwood and Cheltenham, games like that, you know, could we be seeing a sort of a Championship equivalent playing out in front of our eyes here? And yeah, as you say, Kieran McKenna saw enough. I mean, there was a spell after that goal where Ipswich were rocking a little bit, to be honest. And they were very fortunate that it didn't go to 2-0 when Naki Wells cut inside from the right this time and curled that shot against the angle of bar and post. That was a real pivotal moment. If you were to pick out one major moment in this game, I think that would be it. And on the hour mark, a quadruple sub, which by Kieran McKenna standards is pretty early. I was having a look back through sort of the timings of subs this season. Normally it's 70 minutes plus before he turns to the bench, and it's not often you see four all together in one go. So that was pretty early, and it made a difference. But yeah, as you said, Ross, I think that was, well, we know now that that was pre-planned, whatever was happening in the game.
Yeah, let's hear from Kieran McKenna on those four subs. And also, he mentioned Harry Clark in his clip as well, because he came on later.
Look, we knew it was, irrespective of what the scoreline or the game state was, I was going to make early subs tonight because, you know, we had a tough away game at Plymouth on a heavy pitch on Saturday. So I'd already decided that, you know, we were going to make subs early in the game. The way the game was going, we felt like we needed, I could have done five or six, to be honest. Not criticising, just partly on the energy levels, to be honest, and changing the flow of the game and bringing different qualities to the game. And I think it was the four who came on first of all had a, you know, a really good impact in the game. Of course, Wes gets his rhythm straight away, and he gave us that, you know, sort of vertical running threat that we didn't have in the first half. To get him behind, he brought that to the game straight away. That changes the dynamic of it, then creates more space. And Ali came on and, you know, did a really good job. Jeremy, I thought, showed fantastic commitment again, and getting Jack back on the pitch was big as well, and Harry comes on and contributes as well. So no, big impact from the subs. It was a night where we were always going to need that. The way the game turned out, we needed it more and earlier than what we thought, but no, good impact again.
Yeah, what an impact, AJ, those subs. Definitely Wes Burns and Ali Alhamadi, of course, scoring Town's equaliser. Although I was cheering at one stage because Leif Davis, of course, took the shot, and I thought Leif Davis scored because from my angle, I didn't see Ali Alhamadi getting the touch. And I was like, yes, in your face, guys, got the first goal scorer right. Obviously, Leif Davis goes on to win this game for us. We'll get on shortly. But I was like, oh, no. Great to see Ali Alhamadi score another goal. But I was like, no, the first goal scorer has been taken away from me. But yeah, AJ, take it away.
Yeah, I think Stu mentioned that to me in the press box on Tuesday night, because at the time, it was a tight one from the angle that we had in the press box trying to see. I wouldn't have seen it, to be honest, but the eagle eyes of Dr. Watson managed to spot the time. It was Alhamadi who turned it in. He was the one who kind of went off celebrating with a bit of Davis, kind of maybe thinking he might have just crept that over the line. But yeah, probably would have gone in regardless at the end of the day. Alhamadi with the instinct from point blank range. And important to touch on the substitutes, and you can kind of go through all of them. The impact they had was huge. Sometimes, I think, within a game, often you bring on a 2, 3, 4, 5 subs, whatever. You may be looking for one to have a really, really big impact, maybe two, as we've seen in the last few weeks. And we talk about that. We talk about the contributions that they make in terms of the goals, in terms of, I think it was 20% at the time, in terms of goals off the bench. The four that were brought onto the pitch for the 30, well, almost 40 minutes, if you're going to count stoppage time, that they were on there. All absolutely excellent. Every single one of them. You look at Jack Taylor, Wes Burns, Ali Alhamadi, Jeremy Sarmiento, Wes Burns drawing fouls, creating chances. Such an amazing player off the bench. Amazing player in the team as well. But to have that energy and speed off the bench was crucial. Ali Alhamadi getting the goal. Jeremy Sarmiento, lively. He thrives in that role. Jack Taylor coming on for his first minutes, I believe, since returning from injury as well. And he just added an extra bit of drive in midfield that they really needed in terms of having a player who I think he suits that role quite well in terms of coming up against the Bristol City side. You still had that mid-block, but essentially sticking to their principles. And then you had Taylor coming on, who's someone, as we've spoken about, that has a lot of experience as playing as a 10, trying to be deeper. So you've got a very attacking number 8, pretty much. Just exactly what they needed in terms of getting another body forward into around the final third. Just so, so important, so crucial. Everyone had an impact. And it's not often that you can see wholesale changes being made where everything that's done impacts the game. And yeah, absolutely credit to Town. Again, we talk about it every single week in terms of what the substitutes bring, but this was probably the game for me that ended up defining that.
Yeah, and then Stu, go get the equaliser, and Bristol City take the lead again, which I wasn't expecting after the momentum was on Town side, getting the equaliser and those subs make the impact. But yeah, Bristol City make it 2-1. Conway with a looping header to give the Robins the lead again.
Yeah. Shout out to Wes Burns, who just picked up completely where he left off from. He'd had a fantastic game against Rotherham, 2 goals and assists there. Then Crawley limps off with a calf strain in the first half against Birmingham, sits out the Plymouth trip, but was just explosive from the minute he came on the pitch. And it was that run. When he's in that mood, he's virtually unstoppable. When he combines that pace and strength, that was what led to the Town equaliser, sort of bursting, shrugging off his man to pull the ball back to Davis. Yeah, you're right. I think that was a goal-bound shot, and he was gutted because I think he's been working on his shooting a little bit. Leaf, he mentioned, I think we'll play the clip in a bit about his missed chance at Plymouth that he put in the stand. So he really concentrated on just sort of caressing that ball back towards the bottom corner. And a little bit of him is probably gutted that sort of Ali Alhamidi was Johnny on the spot and did the right thing to stick out his foot and just make sure the ball ends up in the back of the net. But yeah, it goes to 1-1. And as you rightly say, you think, right, that's it. Momentum's changed now. Subs are going to make an impact, kick on. But it didn't work out that way. Bristol City, with the nature of the game, became a little bit more open at this stage. And their counter-attack threat was still there, and it showed. And there was a warning sign when Vaz had to tip over a Mometi sort of dipping shot over the bar. And it's a pretty poor goal from an Ipswich Town perspective that sees them go behind in the 77th minute. It's just a sort of a hopeful ball into the corner. Leif Davis just misjudges the flight of it, really allows it to sort of go over his head, and Sykes hooks the ball back from the byline. And Conway, I think with his first touch, he'd only come on seconds earlier as a substitute, was left pretty unmarked in the box. All that said, it's an unbelievable header to kind of adjust and loop that into the top corner. So fair play to him for that, but one that Ipswich won't be happy with. And more damage to undo.
Yeah, and just by the way, ladies and gentlemen, people on the curtain, my internet is having a bit of a mare, so hopefully I'm all good. But I was unstable for a second there, my internet was saying. But we're all good to go because we've got a lot to get through, because this was a crazy 10-15 minutes. Obviously, Town get another equaliser, AJ. Leif Davis involved again with a free kick. And Connor Chaplin, smallest player on the pitch, scores another header. When will teams learn?
Yeah. Well, for starters, what is it with internet this week? We've got yours, got the Portman Road one. Blimey. Yeah, this was very similar to the Sunderland goal that he scored in a way. So for starters, the reaction from Town to drive forward to win the free kick. I think Alhamidi gets fouled by...
It's Viner. He just sort of ragdolls him. I've watched it back. I think there was a case of mistaken identity with who got booked afterwards. But it's definitely Viner it's just great centre-forward play from Alhamidi, who sort of almost straight from the kickoff, wasn't it, really? It's just a mounted attack, and he backs in and he wins the foul. And yeah,
I think it was McCrory who might have picked up the booking from that one. But yeah, Viner who brings him down then. And immediate thought is you've got a lot of pretty towering figures in this team. But yeah, again, when will teams learn? You've got to keep saying it. And I always felt it maybe discredits Connor Chaplin in a way, but it is a case of teams making sure that they put someone on him. We've seen Sunderland do it. We've seen it work with the short free kicks as well. We've seen him do it against Sunderland now with the header. The delivery for me was what stood out, because obviously Chaplin has not positioned himself in the place where you think he's going to be the man making a connection with the ball in. You think that it's going to go more, well, into the mixer, I guess is the best terminology, but it's quite a short free kick that gets played right onto his head. Just finds that little pocket of space, as he's so good at doing. The power he gets behind it with the header is absolutely exceptional, because you see it really fizz in. Goalkeeper O'Leary has absolutely no chance. Kind of bounces off his glove and up into the roof of the net. I love those kind of goals where it's really, really powerful. You just see it smack up. Chaplin has his little run as the celebration. Fans go absolutely ballistic behind the goal. One of my favourite ones, kind of aesthetically in that sense. But yeah, how can you have someone who's 5'6", 5'7"-ish scoring these kind of headers from a free kick? It's not really what you expect at all, is it? He obviously came close to scoring in the first half, hit the post from point-blank range from another, I think that might have been from another set piece. Maybe
was, yeah, Kiefer Moore flicked on a corner, didn't he? His reaction times, Connor Chaplin, are unbelievable. I think back to the winner at QPR when he had the shot blocked and he's down on the deck, and the wherewithal he had to spring to his feet, spot the ball quickly, little backlift on his shot. That is, it's his reaction times that make him so deadly. And we talk about him finding space in the box and why do opponents not wise up to it? Well, knowing it's coming and being able to stop it are two different things entirely. And he's just so sharp with his movement. And yeah, you can't really teach that. I think that's the best goal scorers in the game just kind of have it. I'm sure they work hard on it, but I think there's an innateness to it. And the delivery from Leaf is obviously, yes, it's near post, but the pace on it is just whipped in, isn't it? And I think I said before the game, if Ipswich win the set piece battle, if they match or outscore Bristol City from set pieces, then they'll be okay. And it just about worked out that way in the end. But good to see Ipswich score another set piece goal. And
The reaction times thing is interesting because it got kind of brought up at Plymouth as well. Because you look at when the ball gets played back in, obviously for the Kiefer Moore goal, gets brought back in by Cameron Burgess and his unbelievable header to set up Kiefer Moore. Kieran kind of touched on it after the game and said he's got these unbelievable pictures in his mind. Absolutely love that line. Fantastic. Just in terms of this idea of knowing where everyone is as well. He said he knows where the defenders are, he knows where his teammates are, he knows where the space is. So to have that kind of idea of everything that's going on behind you, everything that's going on in front of you, where the ball is, add that then with his reaction times to make the right decision, to do it in the right way. There aren't that many players that I feel can do that. So, yeah, it is absolutely about him being lethal and just so dangerous in terms of how quick he can be in the final third or really in any phases of the pitch. But it's also, I think, just about his understanding of the game, his understanding of tactical setups. I've spoken, he's often kind of touched on tactical side of games before in terms of where the centre-backs are going to position themselves in terms of things like triggering presses, all those kind of elements of the game. And I just think that it's given him such a big understanding of how these teams set up.
I mean, he had no right to hit the post, really, with that one in the first half. Looking back at it, it came to him so quick and he's on a really acute angle to have fashion that shot against the outside of the post. Just again is another example of his reaction times, and he's one of many that's having a very good season. So 2-2, 80th minute. We'd had plenty of drama already, but there was lots more to come.
Yeah, more drama. Obviously Chaplin could have been involved in the penalty, in terms of maybe taking it. Once again, there was a debate who's going to take it. Obviously, Wes Burns gets fouled, just bursting with that pace. Bristol City player probably just went, oh, God, I've got to try to win the ball here. Obviously, takes Wes Burns down. And
I love that run from Wes. It's not only the speed, but he does the rugby style kind of palm off to hold Pring away. And that's not to be underestimated, the strength that he showed there, as well as the pace to win that. And I did wonder on first viewing, I think all our first reaction was that's a penalty. Then you see the first replay from a certain angle and you think maybe he's got a little sliver of the ball, but he didn't. There was no ball involved and the ref was right to the point to spot with that one.
And obviously, Ali Hamadi steps up. Of course, he stepped up against Millwall. Obviously, there was that discussion point with Amorsi giving him the ball. And he, of course, goes and scores his first goal there to make it 4-0. This is a different situation, boys. 2-2 in front of the North Stand. And Ali Hamadi steps up, Stu. And it's saved by the keeper. He hasn't missed it. But he saved. So it's one of those where, oh, no, it's not good. But the keeper has saved it, but maybe the penalty wasn't great, was it? But a lot of pressure. No,
No, it wasn't. I think as soon as the ref pointed to the spot, I've noted on the replay that Connor sort of looks across to his mate Wes, and Wes sort of points at him and says, you know, you, as if to say, you've got to take it. That was my sort of reading of the body language there. Connor stands with the ball in his hands for quite a long time. I think everyone's expecting him to take it. He's been the man to take penalties normally for Ipswich in the past. I think he's had a fairly mixed record of taking them. And it turned out to be a bit of a decoy. Clubs do it quite a lot now. You know, someone holds the penalty because then the opposition will sort of jostle around and try and put them off from a psychological perspective. And at the last minute, you toss it to somebody else who's been able to stay away from all that chaos and gather their thoughts a little bit. Ali Alhamady takes it. Not sure anyone was expecting that. Completely different scenario to Millwall. Made sense there. Ipswich were 3-0 up. Game was done away from home. You know, low risks, high reward scenario there for Ali Alhamady to get his first goal in front of a packed away end. Here, you know, the pressure is on at 2-2 in a ding-dong game to score that in front of the North Stand. We know he's a young man not lacking in confidence and belief. He's a bubbly character. But took some serious cojones to step up and take that one. So fair play to him. But whether it was the right decision or not, I don't know. I mean, sometimes you can tell with body language with someone standing over a penalty and, you know, he's panting quite hard, understandably. I mean, we're all nervous watching it. I can't imagine what it was like taking it. And bit of a powder puff effort, wasn't it? Wasn't one anywhere near the corner and the goalkeeper lands on it. So thankfully it didn't prove to be costly.
No. AJ, where were you at when obviously you're panicking with bloody Wi-Fi having issues and stuff like that, and, you know, oh my god. But yeah, when he missed that penalty, it's like, oh no. But this team never give up and all that, and obviously the town fans were still, you know, getting on top of the town players and go, yeah, we still got this. But yeah, a pressure moment, and unfortunately, yeah, he's missed it.
Yeah, Wi-Fi at this point was okay. I feel like I can hear myself on the audio here. A bit weird. Yeah. But I think at the time that they had left was crucial because there was plenty of goals up until that point. There were quite a few stoppages. I think that Bristol City may be trying to wind things down a little bit at that point as well, because you know they know what's coming. They know that all the momentum's going to swing in those final few stages of the game. So when he misses the penalty, 86, it's a real, real sucker punch. And I think McKenna referenced it afterwards, and 99.9% of stadiums fans will think, well, that's it. Missed a penalty within the last 5 minutes of the game. Not only is it hard to come back from that in any sort of kind of time, but also thinking about how much of a blow that must be to the players in most teams, at least. That was the big thing, and that's why I think the supporters understood that wasn't done by any stretch, because you miss an opportunity like that and there's just a general understanding that Town will dust themselves off and go again, and that's exactly what they did. It wasn't a case of kind of heads down, that's it, it's drop points, we've lost ground on the other teams, Leeds and Southampton, Leeds and Leicester obviously are both, I think both had confirmed 1-0 wins at that point as well. Not that the players would have known, but probably would have had a good idea that that would have happened. So there's every expectation within kind of the psychology of footballers that you just crumble at that point and think, well, what else can you do? But the perseverance and the determination to keep going, to keep thinking that, well, there's going to be plenty of added time. We know that we're going to have opportunities. And that's exactly what they did. And I know we'll touch on it now, but even after they get the winner as well, they probably had another two opportunities to score then.
Yeah, that final 10 minutes was just mental. Stu, where do you want to start? Because, missing that penalty and then all that, chances galore, and obviously we do finally get that winner. But did you feel it was going to come? Or what do you feel? Oh, 2-2, you know, some fans have gone. But as we know, we've had many games this season where there's been late goals.
didn't really have much time to think, full stop, to be honest. I mean, we're talking minutes between these goals, aren't we? 77-2-1, 80-2-2, 84-minute penalty, a bit of time all around that. And before we even really had time to kind of process everything that was going on, Ipswich took the lead again. It was 89 minutes. So I guess in hindsight, we're kind of working out what we thought at that time. And it's very easy to sit back and go, well, they've done it before and they do it again. And I personally, head was a bit scrambled at that stage. So credit to the players for kind of composing themselves. And Kieran McKenna said afterwards, 99.9% of crowds and teams would have, as Alex said, sort of crumbled and felt a bit sorry for them and thought this isn't meant to be for us. But Ipswich just trust in what they do, and they believe that another chance will come, and it did. It originates from a Luke Wolfenden sort of ball over the top, really, and Jeremy Sarmiento, one of those subs that we mentioned, had an impact with a sort of a headed flick on, which he wouldn't necessarily sort of put down as his top of his skill set, but well done to him for helping the ball on. And then your man Leif Davis, who you've had a little gut feeling about scoring for a while. A few people sort of mocking you for that being a bold shout, but I think Alex has pointed out that he's had a sizable number of shots for a left back this season, and you know, I guess law of averages had meant a goal was coming at some stage. He wasn't to get that first one, but he did exactly what he did for the first Ipswich goal. And just, I mean, there was a lot of time for him to overthink that again and snatch at it, especially as, you know, he had a man closely marking him down the left side of the box, but just picks his spot, puts his foot through it, and yes, Rob Dickey slides into to put the ball into the net, but that's on target. I don't think you'll be taking that one away from him. And just pandemonium. Another memorable moment that we'll be talking about for quite some time.
Yeah, and let's hear from Leif Davis on his first goal in the Championship. Obviously, he has scored for Town before in League One, but his first goal for Town in the Championship. Let's see what he had to say about it.
You're talking of good moments, your first goal of the season. Couldn't imagine there would have been a better way to do it.
Yeah, I was still thinking about the mistake I made at the time as well, but I know I couldn't let it get away too much, and I know my qualities that I can do higher up the pitch as well, and obviously I got my first goal, and yeah, I was buzzing to take it, obviously to take win the lead again.
Feels like it's been coming, plenty of assists, you've had quite a few shots now, and finally had one hit the back in
there. Yeah, I was buzzing after my shot against Plymouth the other day that went straight in the back of the stand. but the lads told us to just how good of a left foot I've got, and just be composed and do what I do and just place it in the net. And when I felt it was, I was just saying, I'm just going to place it, and I did, and it obviously felt perfect for us.
And AJ, Leif Davis, he's just a lovely young man, isn't he? And what a player he is. We'll get on to his assists equaling record shortly. But that goal, when that went in, Portman Road exploded.
Yeah, interesting to, I mean, you guys both at Rotherham, how that one would have compared to the late winner there. I assume it probably would have been fairly similar. Real intelligence as well, just in terms of knowing that you've got the space to run into there. He ends up going ahead of Jeremy Sarmiento, who's kind of coming quite narrow. It's just a really well-worked goal, deflection or not, to kind of take it in. And it has been coming, so we've got it here. I think it's 27 shots he's taken. Again, not going to like it, but an XG of 1.78 kind of suggests that he's done more than enough to find the back of the net. Done it the wrong end a couple of times already. But it absolutely has been coming. You look at all the stats that back it up in terms of, it's not just his creative numbers, but his overall attacking numbers ranks him sky high in terms of fullbacks. And it's just another Leif Davis night, absolutely. And one thing that I think I've said quite a lot on the player ratings is you look through his performances in some of the games, you think he's not been quite as influential. The opposition have nullified him quite well. And you look at the stats, you look at his attacking influence, obviously things like chances created, you have to bear in mind that will also include set pieces, but you also can't take that out because his set piece delivery is absolutely crucial to this team. Even when he's not really having his best game, when he's being nullified, when he's not given the space to work with, he's still playing such an influential role. That's hard to do on a consistent basis. Very, very rarely having a game where he's totally kept quiet. And that can be in terms of assists. We're now seeing it in terms of the goals as well. As I said, unfortunate that he's only on one at this point. But showing himself as a really well-rounded fullback and one as well. We touch on maybe the defensive side a little bit. Is that aspect of his game as good as you'd want it to be? Well, it can't be for the kind of player that he is. But I also think that there's been a huge improvement in that aspect as well. So you've just seen them grow into such a well-rounded, talented player.
Yes, Stu, we spoke about Lee Davis loads of times on this, but should we talk about his assists? Because he's now equaled the championship record for a defender with 14, and he's 10 games left to go. He's pretty much going to break it, isn't he?
Yeah, I think we've kind of known that for quite some time, haven't we? The pace that he's been going with these assists. 14 is the record. He's now hit 14. That's Kieran Trippier at Burnley and Barry Douglas at Wolves. Barry Douglas, a former Leeds teammate of Leif Davis's. He's been texting Leif to say, don't break my record. And that's given him a little bit of extra motivation to go and do that. Yeah, he's got 10 games to get one more. He's going to break it, and he's not going to just break it. He's going to smash it, isn't he? So, yeah, that was great to see. And by scoring, he becomes the 22nd different goal scorer for Ipswich Town this season. That's mind-blowing, isn't it? To have 22 different players score across all competitions. And there's a few more that might come to the party yet as well. Cameron Burgess hasn't scored, for example. So I don't know what the records would be in terms of number of different goal scorers. And I don't think anyone will be able to work that out necessarily. But I would imagine that's got to have a real chance of being, you know, the most ever.
Yeah. Stat man, whoever's out there.
Yeah,
get that stat, let us know. But let's hear from Lee Davis on his assists and just the win as a whole as well.
Yeah, it's a good achievement. I'm absolutely buzzing. I know the person who's as well who had the record, Barry, and I had a message off him. It was a few months ago. He said, you better not break it. So, and that gives more motivation to go and break it. So, but yeah, I'm delighted. The main thing is we get the 3 points at the end of it and keep obviously fighting till the end of the season. I want to help the team with everything. I want to create chances. I do want to get on the score sheet, but I do like creating chances, as you see for the free kick as well for Connor. It just gives us a good feeling when I know I'm stepping over a free kick. I know this could be a big moment for us as well. And everyone just says, just trust your left foot. I spoke obviously with staff with deliveries and that as well. I've been working on it. They said just be confident because they know how good I can be as well with delivering the ball in the box. So yeah, I'm just buzzing to be fair.
Leaf, mate, we're buzzing too because that was another fantastic win. AJ, still though, time to play. I don't think how was it 8 minutes or something like that, extra time, added time, I think. Still a lot to happen. One big shout, by the way, and I think it's gone a bit under the radar, but Jack Taylor's tackle in stoppage time. I know Stu will love this, but that was just beautiful. I watched it many times, and fair play to Jack Taylor because, of course, he comes on as part of that quadruple sub. And maybe he's gone under the radar because obviously the other three, you know, had moments in the game. But this was a big moment, AJ.
Yeah, big tackle with that one. And then a few seconds later, he goes and hits the post, I think, with a shot from kind of just around the edge of the area. One of those where in the chaos of doing the player ratings, I probably didn't get to appreciate as much as I should have. You look back on that and think, wow, really big contribution. All the subs, actually, as I touched upon, you maybe don't have the time to properly appreciate all the work that they've done. You look back on it and think that they've really, really chipped in here. And Jack Taylor's the one who hasn't had a direct contribution. Obviously, Sarmiento has the assist. Ohamedi has the goal. Wes Burns won the penalty and kind of had the pre-assist for Ohamedi's goal there as well. So they've all had kind of more tangible parts to play in that game. But Jack Taylor, you can't kind of ignore how important he was here. I always feel like maybe that kind of tackling side isn't really his strength necessarily, because he's not your Massimo Luongo defensive midfielder. He's not a Sam Morsy type or a Lewis Travis type, but it shows that he's got power behind him. He timed it to perfection. It was really excellent. We all love one of those, don't we? It's really good to see. So a strong contribution for him, and a perfect time to have him back as well, because in terms of the midfield options that Town have there with the three, they're not samey at all, but there's no colossal difference necessarily between the three. You look at Luongo's one who likes to drive forward a bit, but he is still that kind of quite hard defensive midfielder who can sit back and shield the back line. We all know what Sam Morsy and Lewis Travis bring. And Jack Taylor, I just think, is someone a little bit different, someone who can just add a different dimension, be that off the bench, it seems to work quite well, or even in starts in some games. Crucial time to have him back. He's now got a couple of games to kind of build something up a little bit more, then going into the international break, and then obviously the real running.
And yes, Stu, what's the stat, if you've got it on at hand, with coming back from goals and stuff like that, and late goals as well? It's very we've got loads of great stats we can check out.
I've got the points. So I think it's 28 points that they've taken from losing positions. I saw this on Twitter. I can't remember who it was, but the favourite comparison I saw is it's 28 points from losing positions. Town got 31 when they were last in the Championship. So if they take another win from behind, they'll match the total that they took in their last Championship season. Unbelievable what they've been doing.
Love that. And I think, Stu, you actually asked McKenna about, because obviously he's the Man United connection. Of course, he was a fan of Man United. Obviously, they were known for late goals. And it's been so many this season.
Yeah, there has. I think, just trying to find it now. I think it's 12. Yeah, here we go. 13 goals scored beyond the 85th minute. A sizable number of those have been kind of 89, 90 stoppage time goals. It's not by chance. It's not fluke. It's not lucky. There are a number of factors that go into it. The fitness of the team, that if you remember right back to pre-season, Kieran McKenna talked about Burnley being kind of the poster boys for how far they run in games and how hard they run in games, and that was the physical level that Ipswich needed to match, and they worked them really hard in Austria and throughout pre-season to for this stage of the season. It's the substitutes, it's being able to have everyone ready to come on and play their part and buy into that side of things as well, and not feel like it's a punishment that they're coming on for bit parts. They're just as important as everyone else. So many factors go into it, and credit to the crowd as well. I think, there's been some times this season where I felt like on the odd occasion there's been a bit of expectation started to creep in amongst the fans, and they were waiting for things to happen. They really helped. They were the proverbial 12th man in this game. You know, frustrating first hour, but that never felt like that crept into the air at all. Even with those two setbacks in the second half, they stayed right behind the team. And because they've seen it happen before. So when you've seen it happen before, you can believe it happens again, and it becomes a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So, Man United are the prime example of that, aren't they? With Fergie time, and everyone would feel like, they're lucky. They got refs on their side. They get this, they get that. No, you make your own luck. The best teams, there's no coincidence that it happens for the best teams, because, a lot of things go into that.
Yeah, and AJ, this team just never give up either. As I said, players have come out, and as Stu said, mentioned there, they are one of the fittest in the league, because they just keep going and keep going. They don't believe they've been beaten. And, of course, at the time they were drawing 2-2, but they went on to, of course, win this game. But they just, this team never give up.
Yeah, I think we are owed an apology from Stu. He said he was going to apologise after the game because, as you remember in the last podcast, he said, I wouldn't mind a late goal. I think he did mind a late goal this time, and it's kind of what you have to expect just in terms of the way they keep pushing and they keep plugging away. We've seen it so many times. The social media reaction is always quite an interesting one in terms of looking at reactions, mostly from Leeds fans, and you know, there's always that kind of the lucky side to it. You make your own luck, of course. One that made me laugh actually was a Leicester fan who tweeted out, "I can't wait for Ipswich to win in stoppage time with a lucky double deflection or something like that," which almost came true in fairness. But you absolutely make your own luck. And in a way, I think the way that they do it is actually quite a good thing. The way that they frustrate these fans, because they're going to be frustrating the other clubs and the other players as well, because I'm absolutely sure that Leeds players come into the dressing room after they've beaten Stoke 1-0, they probably see the scoreline at Ipswich and think, good, we're finally going to get back there. They've conceded these goals, they've missed the penalty, brilliant, and this is now back in our hands. Imagine how sickening it must be that they're doing all this work, putting an unbelievable season to their credit, and they're still behind Ipswich, who still keep finding a way. It just must be so grating and frustrating that Town on the other side that aren't going to back out of this race and still find themselves in a pole position, still know that if they were, I mean, I don't think it will happen, but if they were to win all their remaining games, they've got it in their hands and they would go up. So to be able to say that going into the run-in, I don't know when we consider the run-in, I'd probably say 10 games. So going now into this weekend, yeah, so exactly. Going into the weekend in terms of the run-in, that's just such a fantastic position to be in, and that absolutely goes down to the unbelievable perseverance and character within this group.
I've got a nice little clip here from Leif Davis, who mentions the subs and come from behind, and there's a few good lines from him, so let's hear from Leif once again.
It was a big thing, wasn't it, the substitutes that looked really, really strong going into tonight?
Yeah.
That quadruple sub seems to change things a bit.
Yeah, everyone's here for a reason as well. It's just difficult that there's only 11 players that can play. But everyone that's out there comes on the pitch as well, fights, gives all their heart on the pitch when they come on and do everything for the team.
Yeah, perseverance coming from behind twice to go and do that. You're so good at doing it. You've collected the most points from losing positions. Another great example of it.
Yeah, that's how strong of a team we are mentally. We know we don't let our heads drop. We always keep pushing and yeah, that's how strong of a team we are together. With the togetherness of the team's very, very strong. We suffer together. We enjoy the good moments of the game together. And yeah, we've obviously came again, from behind again tonight.
Yes, team are just so together, aren't they, Stu? And I've been watching you. I think you've got something prepared for us. So take it away. What have you got ready? I don't know. I'm just seeing you prepare something really interesting. So take it away.
I'm sorry to disappoint you, Ross. No, I was just starting. I thought we might be transitioning into a bit of a Cardiff preview. So I was just starting to have a little glance at that.
That's okay, all. Yeah, we'll get on to that shortly. We've got another clip, though, from Kieran McKenna. And just on him, on the win as a whole, because we haven't heard from Kenna in terms of... It's been mainly the Leif Davis show, and obviously it should be, because he was man of the match. He got a 10, AJ, by the way, in your player ratings, your first ever 10. Did you just feel this was the night where you needed to give a 10 to somebody?
Yeah. It's difficult because it's a perfect performance, apart from the mistake, which kind of in that sense means it's not a perfect performance and should it have been a 10? Who knows? But I feel like it was the night, it was a very vibes-based night in terms of a lot of, yeah, exactly, trying to push things together, get things out, the deadlines. Head was kind of on Mars for a lot of it, and I just kind of got to the point where I was going through it. I was actually having an interesting conversation with a friend of the pod, Rodney, the other day, and saying, you know, you either have to do the player ratings the next day where you have time to reflect, and you might say, well, you can go up to a 9, you can come down to a 9, you can be a 7 and 8 or whatever, or if you're doing it after the game, it just becomes a bit of kind of your gut feelings on things, and that was one of it at the time. You looked at his performance, and I never really put the blame on him for the mistake necessarily, just in terms of I really thought the defending in the box should have been miles better to shut Conway down, and his performance in the final third was exceptional. You can't really argue with...
Why not? Two assists.
Exactly. Two assists and a goal
from left back. Yeah.
Live a little, guys. Come on.
I think well deserved. So the first 10 of the AGA player ratings. Can there be many more this season? We shall wait and see. But yeah, let's hear from the K-Dog, Kieran McKenna, on the win as a whole. Yes, I've called him K-Dog because he deserves it after this one. Obviously, he's been fantastic since he's come in, but especially after this game, let's hear his thoughts.
Of course, a brilliant way to win a football match. And, you know, I think a night and an end to a match in an atmosphere that we have to enjoy. And some quality shown in that second half that we have to be very, very proud of. Another really good night for the football club. Of course, then if you dissect the game from a more analytical point of view, there's other things to take, other things to learn. It was, you know, a difficult game. We knew it was going to be. The challenge in front of us in that first half was exactly the challenge that we expected, to be honest. You know, I said it before the game, Bristol City are an excellent team in those conditions where they can defend in a mid-block. They're very good at, you know, blocking off all the areas that you want to get to, blocking off the connections that you want to get, stopping your, certainly playing through them, and they're athletic and disciplined and well organised, and they're a hard team to play against, and they carry a threat in the counter, and they showed that. It was a difficult game. The second half was different. The game opened up. There were more chances at both ends. There was more space, and of course, our players relished that, and the subs had a massive part in coming on and utilising that space well and scoring three goals and creating a couple of our big chances at the end. And so I think there's the performance to analyse, which we will do, and try and learn and get better from it, but also there's the emotion of the game and the scenes in the stadium. There are things that we have to really enjoy tonight.
Yeah, the scenes at full time were fantastic, and the fans were very happy indeed. Any other business then, boys, from the game? We've covered nearly every base here, a lot to cover. But Stu, anything else you want to mention before we do segue onto Cardiff, as you're now prepared for that?
No, I don't think so. We go again.
And as we mentioned earlier, by the way, we have mentioned it. I'd mentioned intro, but it's 6 wins in a row, boys, as well. Which we said 5 wins in a row in the championship is crazy, but 6 wins, do, dear oh dear, this team are just unbelievable.
Well, we can use this as a segue into Cardiff, because 6 wins in a row in the league has only ever happened twice at this level or higher before. That was the year they won what was then called the second division, the second tier under John Lyle. And it was in the 80-81 season where they were just pipped to the top flight title and won the UEFA Cup, of course. So rarefied air, an incredible achievement at any level of football. It doesn't happen very often. Can they make it 7 wins in a row this weekend? That would create club history. Never been done before at this level.
And obviously, Kieran McKenna has broken club records everywhere, pretty much. So I'm sure he's going to go, yep, all and have another one, please, on my list of my resume. So, can they do it? And, we're heading back to Wales. Obviously, we went to Swansea. Town got a win there. This time it's Cardiff City. And obviously, Kiefer Moore returning to the Welsh capital. Although, we'll get an update from Kieran McKenna in terms of how he's doing. Because, of course, as Stuart mentioned earlier, he had a bit of a niggle with his... Was it his ankle? Was it his knee? One of those. Cardiff are in good form. AJ, do you want to kick this off? Is it 4 wins in a row, which are there on a bit of a winning run as well?
Yeah, I think it's 3 in a row. This is an interesting one, Cardiff, because I think coming off the back of the thrashing they had at Carrow Road and going into the Blackburn result, it felt like they were maybe the first team whose season was done. It was kind of my assumption I had at that point, early to jump to those conclusions. But then to record three wins on the bounce. Now, look, these aren't necessarily top teams that they've gone and beaten. They've beaten Stoke 2-1, won 1-0 away at Bristol City. That's a derby, as we touched upon. And then beaten Huddersfield last night. For starters, it shows, obviously, goes without saying, a big improvement. They're a lot better than they have been. And there was some pressure on Errol Bullitt, who'd kind of gone at the club a little bit for the January recruitment and what he had to work with at the club. And you could see it in the results as well. It just felt very, very flat. A lot of games that they were losing, just getting not really sucked into the relegation battle because they'd had quite a strong start. But it just felt like everything was fading away. And that's been the story of Cardiff seasons pretty much since they've been relegated from the Premier League a few years ago. And this little run's given them a little bit of life now. They are very, very strong defensively, as we've seen, one goal conceded in their last four. And one of the things that stood out to me having a look at this is their set pieces. They have scored more set pieces than anyone else in the division. They have scored the same number of set piece goals as they have open play goals. If Town can get that under control, you're probably limiting really their biggest threat. Their output isn't great in terms of what they've done. Yeah, three goals in the last four games. Before then, they'd only really scored against Norwich, couldn't score against West Brom, couldn't score against Preston, kind of edged a win away at Watford. They're not known for kind of free-flowing attacking football. They are solid. They are quite direct. A little bit different to the team that came to Portman Road back in September. So you know what you're going to get. They're not going to go away from that. They'd be absolutely crazy to go away from that. They're going to bring that kind of approach into the game against Town. If they can get the set-piece system under control, then I don't really know where too many of Cardiff's threats come from. That will be the biggest thing for me. But you know it's going to be quite a physical, gritty battle, I'd say, against a team that just don't tend to concede too many.
Yeah, I've just quickly looked. Their top goal scorer is their defender, Perry Ng.
Who also, as well, you think in terms of the set pieces, you know, thinking big, towering centre-back heading them in. I think he's 5'11". Which, yes. I mean, come on, that's tall. It's a lot taller than I am. But for a centre-back to be getting that kind of space in the box as well, you're expecting someone a lot taller, and he isn't. He's a top player, three assists and six goals.
Yeah, formerly a Crewe. So Liam from Crewe will like that. But yes, Stu.
He gets far too many mentions on this podcast. I'm just going to say that.
He drives me everywhere. And so, yeah, he's got to get a few shout-outs here and there.
Oh, right. You want me to carry on talking about Cardiff? Set pieces is key, as Alex said, isn't it? Said it before the Bristol City game. Win that battle. Ipswich have got a very good chance of winning this game. They don't concede many. They don't score many from open play. Kiefer Moore, going back to a club that he was adored at, that they pushed really hard to sign him. It's going to be interesting to see what sort of reception he gets. I think their manager has said about how he had various players trying to get in his ear and get that deal done on transfer deadline day, but he opted for Ipswich. His presence in both boxes is going to be key. I've talked about, you know, don't underestimate the defensive side of things when Ipswich are repelling, certainly in these tough away games, repelling set pieces and balls into the box. So hopefully his ankle's okay. He seemed to run that off at the weekend, and McKenna didn't seem to be too concerned by that post-match. Wes Burns, Cardiff boy, used to go to Cardiff games as a kid. His brother's a season ticket holder there as well. We saw his celebrations in front of the Swansea fans recently. So this game, yeah, has a bit of extra interest for him. I would imagine he'll come back into the starting 11 after the impact that he had off the bench the weekend. Whether Nathan Broadhead, another Welshman, is fit for this one, we don't know. He's missed a couple now with a thigh strain, but didn't sound too severe. So we'll find out a bit more from Kieran McKenna, and it's a Friday morning press conference. So we'll get some updates on that. But it falls into another category of no easy game in the Championship, away from home, long trip. Never underestimate the challenge. But look, the way Ipswich Town are right now, you just have to be confident about them, don't you? They've had an extra day's rest as well. I think that always plays a part. Cardiff played last night, so I think that will help from an Ipswich Town point of view. So, yeah, we'll see. We just keep trying to enjoy this ride and see what comes next.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. Just everyone keep enjoying it. And yeah, 10 games now to go and we'll see what happens. AJ, any other business from that? Predictions, obviously, is the big thing. What do you reckon? Our time going to make it 7 wins on the spin?
Yeah, I think they are. I think this is one where I think actually second in the set piece rankings are a Town behind Cardiff. I'm pretty sure. So you've got two sides that have that as a strength. Obviously, Town have a few more going for them. So I think if they can get Cardiff's side under wraps, I think they can go get a clean sheet. And we know what those kind of performances are on the road. So I think they're going to do that. I'm going to go for a 2-0 Ipswich Town win. I think that knowing how strong Cardiff are in terms of set pieces, in terms of the attacking sense, I probably think they'll be quite good in the defensive sense. I think that they're going to try and keep Kiefer more busy. And I think that's going to open up some space for Connor Chaplin to continue his fine goal scoring form, him to score first, Town to win 2-0.
Ooh, clean sheet as well. I like that. Stu, what do you reckon, my friend? Are you going to be like AJ, going to go for 7 in a row?
Yeah. Because in the words of Ross Halls, why not? 2-1 Ipswich, Wesley Burns.
That's my prediction. I should have gone first. Damn it.
That's fine.
Yeah, but actually, it doesn't matter. You're down there, aren't you, at the bottom at the moment?
Very much so, yeah. I'm cut adrift, aren't I?
Yeah, well, you know, some big results. You know, these 10 games, mate, you never know. Get bang on.
It's a run-in for you as well, Stu.
Yeah.
I'm in a dog fight.
Pretty much. But we all got a point, obviously, from Tuesday night, but we need maximum points, a lot of us. But yeah, I'm going to go 2-1 as well. Do I change my goal scorer? Do I go Cameron Burgess now I've got on the train? I'm just going to go for who hasn't scored yet. And you know what? Why not? Cameron Burgess, first goal scorer, 2-1. And that will add, because who else hasn't scored yet out of the squad? That's another piece for a future.
Edmondson, has he scored yet? There's not many left, is there?
Can't be, because yeah, Axel recently scored, of course, in the cup.
If Danasian gets back from injury before the end of the season,
he's never scored for Town, so he didn't.
Yeah, well, Don Ball, add that one in there.
Just be the ultimate
Travis
icing Travis on the cake.
Oh, if he goes and scores, like he comes back from that injury and the final game chucks him on in the final minute and he scores the winner to
send playoff us final. I mean, obviously, ooh, we don't want a playoff final, but if it was to be any point or even a final day, Huddersfield. Yeah.
He's nearing a return from injury, is JD. I mean, we talked about surely there can be no more denaisances now. Imagine.
Ultimate denaisance.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be amazing. But yeah, Cardiff. Obviously, it's a Sky game once again. 12:30 kickoff, lunchtime in Cardiff. If you're going, enjoy it as always. If you're not, follow coverage with us. Us three will be there, ready to cover all bases as standard. But yeah, another jam-packed show. Of course, we're all buzzing because Town made it 6 wins in a row. But boys, any other business from you? Stu, anything else you want to mention, my friend?
No other business.
Love it. AJ, any other business from you?
I love how we filled about 20 minutes of this pod talking about Wi-Fi and Liam Manning shouting and all that kind
and
of
chairs.
Stuff. And chairs, all that kind of stuff. No further business.
I love it. Actually, one final business from me. Obviously, the outro and the plug for the sponsor. But funny little story put out today. Miles Kenlock, formerly of this parish, has been called up to the England C squad alongside another Town player, former Town player in Tom Eastman. So they're playing Wales C. So it's National League players facing each other. So yeah, Miles Kenlock could be an England player for England C. So nice little story there. Miles Kenlock, who's now at Esfleet United, which I never thought I'd be writing about that. Miles Kenlock potentially winning a cap for England C. Love that. But yeah, it's been another great show. Stu, AJ, thanks for joining me as ever. Hope everyone's enjoyed. Of course, shout out to our sponsors, Manscaped. Use the code KOA. You get 20% off and free delivery for all your business, from the hair to the ear to the nose to the beard to down there where the crown jewels are and all that stuff. And also follow us on all our socials on Kings of Anglia on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and the TikTok. AJ's chucking out all the clips and stuff on that. And we'll be back next week to look back at Cardiff. I think Heafy's back. Am I right, boys? Stu, you not going to be the boss anymore? Is Heafy back?
I think he's got Monday off as well, you know. Ooh. I think he's got himself a little day just to ease back in. So we might be without him for one more.
Okay then. So, yeah, going to be me in the hot seat once again. But bring it on. And thanks again for listening. Bye-bye for now.